this last week, we're going to talk about Jacob. So we've worked through all these other stories. The story of Jacob is massive. It starts in Genesis chapter 25. It's the first mention of Jacob, and you go ahead and turn there if you want. And then basically the story of Jacob is the rest of Genesis. 25 more chapters is the story of Jacob and his sons, and particularly one of his sons, Joseph. And the book of Genesis pretty much ends with Jacob dying in Egypt. And so in the middle of the Jacob story, we get his son, Joseph, and all that. But there's a lot of text spilled talking about the story of Jacob. So what I want to do this morning is remember, going way back to September, the goal of this series is to ask ourselves the question, why did they tell these stories again and again and again? And we could probably do that for any one of the Jacob stories. I'm going to mention about 10 or 12 of them right now. We could probably like drill down on any one of these 10 or 12 stories and talk about why did they tell this story about Jacob over and over and over again. But what we're going to do this morning is kind of zoom out a little bit and talk about the broader narrative, about why the Jacob story in general, and what does the Jacob story say about faith, and why did they include it when they were compiling their scriptures, okay? So here's the story of Jacob, and I'm going to have you chime in at various points if you really want. You know, I mean, a lot of my children's church flannel graph stuff growing up was the story of Jacob and his sons. So it starts in chapter 25, verse 19. So let's just start reading and reading there. This is the family tree of Isaac, son of Abraham. Abraham met Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padam Aram. Lucky that's not the scripture reading for the day. She was the sister of Laban, the Aramean. Remember Laban's name. Isaac prayed hard to God for his wife because she was barren. God answered his prayer and Rebekah became pregnant. But the children tumbled and kicked inside of her so much that she said, if this is the way it's going to be, why go on living? Now, gentlemen, you can laugh at this. But if I did a poll of the ladies and said, how many of you ever felt like that during pregnancy? Anyone? Why should I go on living? But I want you to hear this, okay? There's going to be a word that you're going to hear throughout the telling of the Jacob story, that Jacob, even while he's in the womb, his life is a struggle. Jacob is already struggling with his brother in the womb so much, the way this story was told, that it's noted here. And so, and then she went to God to find out what's going on. God told her, two nations are in your womb, two peoples butting heads while still in your body. One people will overpower the other, and the older will serve the younger. And when her time came to give birth, sure enough, there were twins in her womb. The first came out reddish, as if snugly wrapped in a hairy blanket. Birth announcement. We had a kid. It came out of the womb like it was wrapped in a hairy blanket. That's the kind of baby that you say, like, oh, it's so precious. All right, because every baby is precious. All right, where am I? I'm distracting myself with details. His brother followed. His fist clenched right to Esau's heel. They named him Jacob, or heel. Isaac was 60 years old when they were born. And then it tells, oh yeah, the boys grew up. Esau became an expert hunter and outdoorsman. Jacob was a quiet man, preferring life indoors among the tents. Isaac loved Esau because he loved his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. That's something that seems like the dumbest sentence ever, right? Isaac loved his one son because he liked meat. Like, that's all the explanation we get. One day, Jacob was cooking a stew. Esau came in from the field starved. Esau said to Jacob, give me some of that red stew. I'm starved. That's how he came to be called Edom, or red. Jacob said, make me a trade. My stew for your rights as the firstborn. Esau said, I'm starving. What good is a birthright if I'm dead? Jacob said, first swear to me, and he did it. On oath, Esau traded away his rights as the firstborn. Jacob gave him the bread and stew of lentils. He ate and drank, got up and left. That's how Esau shrugged off his rights as the firstborn. So this story, the framing, the introduction, the prologue to the Jacob story is one of struggling with his brother and working out this deal with his brother that basically, like, I'm gonna take all the rights of the firstborn. Now, that's not a thing for us as a culture, I don't think. At least for my boys, you should all know, it's not that way. Caleb doesn't get it all. But that would be their culture, that in families like this, families would have not ever moved out of the home, so to speak. They would have lived in a tribal kind of way. And so to have the rights of the firstborn becomes you become the head of the family. You become the don. You become the whatever. You become the patriarch of the family. and all the rights and privileges and power that that has. And so Jacob basically negotiates that away from his brother, who's older by like 5 minutes. If you jump ahead in the story, the next thing we get is that really famous story of then Jacob now actually stealing the birthright and gets their father to go along with it. So do you remember? I'm just going to tell you these stories because we'd spend all morning reading 10 chapters. So the story goes like this real quickly. And if it's old to you, I'm sorry. And if you can correct me on the details. The story goes like this, that Isaac is old and he's kind of blind, can't see very well. And he decides to... It's time. It's time to make it formal, to make the announcement of who's going to receive his birthright. And so Jacob decides that this is his time to get in on it, and his mom is in on it with him. And so his mom helps him trick his dad by like putting stuff on his arms to make himself hairy, which I don't know how you fool anyone with it. I mean, it has always felt like in the telling of the story, this is the worst disguise ever. And Isaac is the dumbest parent in the history of parenting. Like, because even the sound of his voice, like Isaac's like, you sound strange, but oh well, and decides then to bless Jacob, gives away the birthright to Jacob, names Jacob as the firstborn son. And immediately then, Esau is understandably ticked off. And so then Jacob has to flee. And the text tells us, if you jump ahead to chapter 28, verse 10, Jacob left Beersheba and went to Haran. Do you remember this place? Where does Haran ring a bell to anyone? Or just me? Yeah, where is it? Yeah, remember the story. So remember when we were way back at Abraham's father, Taran. Taran moved from Ur, which is like down by the Tigris and Euphrates River. Wait, I got to do this backwards for you all. Tigris and Euphrates River. Taran moved up to Haran, and then the text tells us he settled there. When God came to Abram and said, hey, let's go. I'm going to lead you to a land. I'm going to show you. Abram is living in Haran at the time. And Abram then travels down the Fertile Crescent through Canaan down to Egypt. Do you remember all this? Please tell me you remember something. All right. Yes. So what's happening here is Jacob, as he flees from his brother, as this struggle ensues with his brother and he fears for his life, he goes back to Haran. He goes back to his grandfather's homeland, which also, by the way, is where Isaac went back and found his wife too. It came up in the Isaac story that we didn't talk about. When he goes back, he meets his uncle Laban, and he falls in love with his uncle Laban's daughter, aka cousin Rachel. And so he talks to his uncle, and he says, like, hey, I really want to marry cousin Rachel. And Laban says, like, yeah, women are property. If you work 7 years, I'll give her back to you. So I want to apologize that this is the way the ancient world worked, but it is. So Laban says, work 7 years for her. Jacob does that. And then you remember what happens then at the wedding. And this is another part of this story that seems ridiculous, right? So they get married. After 7 years, he's going to marry beautiful Rachel. And he marries Rachel. And then the next morning, it says, he realizes, like, what have I done? I married Leah. Which, again, I have lots of questions about how did you get that far and then figure it out? Like, what? Anyway, you can tell me your theories later. That's fine. So then Laban says, like, oh, well, you know, that's what I did. So if you really want Rachel, 7 more years. And so Jacob really loves Rachel. And he's like, that's fine. 7 more years. So he works another 7 years and marries Rachel. And then he and Laban, who we'll call Uncle Father-in-Law now, which shouldn't be a title that is anywhere in any of our family trees. Uncle Father-in-Law says, 7 more years if you want to build up some wealth. That's fine. And so there's this long, convoluted story about how Jacob, like, breeds the sheep in a certain way, and he gets very, very wealthy. And in doing so, incurs the ire of Uncle Father-in-Law and Uncle and Father-in-Law's employees. And so Jacob eventually sneaks out and runs away from his uncle. So all this struggle with his uncle. And then... And so then he's traveling, and his uncle chases him down, and then Rachel steals some gold, some jewel, or some family idols, and then she, you all know this story, by the way, It's fantastic. They come to search for the idols, and Leah has buried them, or Rachel has buried them underneath her, and they're like, we need to search everything, and she's like, I'm on my period. And they're like, all right, well, we'll just let you be. And really, she was hiding all the idols, and that's the excuse she used. Totally got away with it. And so then they finally get away from father-in-law, and then he hears that his brother is coming with 400 armed soldiers. And so Jacob's like, oh no, I'm screwed here. Like, the brother who I stole from years ago has tracked me down, and now it's over, right? And so there's this whole long section about all the scheming he does to figure out, like, what do I do, and how do I not get my brother to kill me? And so he sends his brother all these gifts, and we're going to come back to that story in just a minute. So put a pin in that story. But then he's reconciled with his brother, which is, whoo, like, got through that one. And so then he moves to Canaan, and things are relatively peaceful until his kids sell one of their brothers into slavery, as kids do. And then there's this huge famine in the land, and then he has to move to Egypt because there's a famine, and then he finally dies in Egypt. And the story of Jacob is just exhausting, right? Because the story of Jacob is just struggle, 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 struggle. Fight, claw, figure it out, struggle. So we've been talking the last several weeks as we've worked through the story of Abraham and Isaac, and we've been talking about journey. Like, the spiritual journey is always a story of leaving home. It's always about going out. We talked about last week that God often doesn't show up until we start climbing the metaphorical mountain with our sacrifice, whatever it is. Like, once we step out, that seems to be the space where God shows up. And what's funny is when we tell these kinds of stories in our life, these stories of struggle, we do so with hindsight bias, right? Like, and I said this last week, like, we look back and we're like, oh, it was amazing. That part of our life where we had no money and we lived in an apartment and there was rats. That's such a great story to tell, right? Like, but it wasn't. In the middle of it, it was just struggle. And it was hard. One of my favorite theologians says, life is pain, Highness, and anyone who says differently is selling something. The only way I disagree with this is it's not just pain. It's not just suffering. But it often is pain. It's often suffering. And I think this Jacob story is here because it's supposed to say to us. Now, I want you to think real quickly about the scribes that are compiling the Hebrew scriptures. Where did I say they are? Babylon. They're in Babylon. They're in captivity, right? They've just seen their country annihilated. The top two kingdoms were taken out by the Assyrians in 722 BC. The top 10 tribes disappear from history. We never see them again. 586 BC, the Babylonians come and deport the Israelites. The temple's been destroyed. The city's been sacked. They're living in captivity. Their story over the last several hundred years has been nothing but struggle. It's been an internal struggle to be faithful to the covenant. It's been an external struggle because they've had enemies right here. They live in a land that has Egypt, the one superpower, right between, like, they're between Egypt and now Babylon, the other big superpower. They live right between these two huge superpowers, and they're finding, like, struggle is their middle name. And so I think that one of the reasons they include this story in the stories that they tell about themselves is because it gives them an identity, right? Like, this is who we are. Our story all the time is one of struggle and victory and then defeat and then victory, and then we just keep working at it. We just keep going. We keep moving forward. We keep doing whatever it is that we have to do to take the next step forward. But we know it's going to be hard, and we know it's going to be struggle. I want you to turn in your Bible then to the story here in chapter 32. So this is the night before he's reconciled with his brother. He spent the day, like, sending gifts on ahead to his brother. He's also, like hidden his family away in various places. He's scheming to try to make peace with his brother who he offended all those years ago. So verse 21. So his gifts went before him while he settled down for the night in the camp. But during the night, he got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok, which is a stream. He got them safely across the brook along with all his possessions. But Jacob stayed behind by himself. And a man wrestled with him until daybreak. And when the man saw that he couldn't get the best of Jacob as they wrestled, he deliberately threw Jacob's hip out of joint. Ouch. The man said, "Let me go, it's daybreak." And Jacob said, "I'm not letting you go till you bless me." The man said, "What's your name?" And he answered, "Jacob." And the man said, "But no longer, your name is no longer Jacob. From now on, it's Israel." In other words, God wrestler. You've wrestled with God and you've come through. And Jacob asked, "And what's your name?" And the man said, "Why do you want to know my name?" And then right then and there, he blessed him. Jacob named the place Peniel, God's face, because he said, "I saw God face to face and lived to tell the story." The sun came up as he left Peniel, limping because of his hip. And this is why Israelites to this day don't eat the hip muscle, because Jacob's hip was thrown out of joint. I don't know if that's still true of Jews today, that they don't eat the hip muscle. I have no idea. This story of struggle becomes so integral to Jews' identity that they take it on as their name. I love that translation there, that Israel means God wrestler. This idea, this story is strange because it starts off by telling us that Jacob is wrestling a man, but then when he asks for the man's name, Jacob names the place Peniel, which means God's face. I saw God's face here. And so we're led to believe that this man isn't really a man. It's some kind of incarnate deity of some sort. Some people believe this is a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus, that he actually wrestled with Jesus, or he wrestled with an angel of some sort. But whatever it is, this struggle that he has right there at the edge of the Jabbok, where he wrestles all night with the man, I love this story because it serves as the, if you're going to tell, you know how like, if you're going to know so-and-so, you got to know this one story about them. This story tells you everything you need to know about this person. This story is the story that if you're going to know Jacob, you need to know this. That Jacob is the kind of guy that will be so into the struggle, so into the God wrestling, that he'll do it all night. He'll wrestle all night long. And he won't let go until he gets it figured out. Because that's what the journey is. The journey is one of struggling and keeping going. And I don't think that's the right phrase, but like to keep going. You just keep struggling it out. And so that becomes your identity. Your identity is not just that we had this struggle, but we are the ones who continue to struggle with God. And if you're a Jew living in 5th century Babylon, that's comforting, right? Hey, we're in captivity right now. We're stuck in Babylon, but we're God strugglers. We are the kinds of people who just keep struggling with this, and it'll be okay again. We'll get back to good because we'll just keep struggling and we'll keep struggling and we'll keep struggling and we'll keep struggling. So here's the question I want to ask you all. I was going to answer it, but I think it'd be more fun. Is, should have been a question mark. What do we learn in the struggle? Why is struggle so critical to the journey? And here's what I want to do, all right? Nobody gets to talk in paragraphs because I want lots of people to share, all right? So everybody gets a sentence or two to say, when I've been in struggle, this is what I've learned. That you don't have to lose faith through all of it. Good. We learn patience. Good. What else? I'm stronger than I thought I was. Oh, that's so good. Eric. You get better by doing. Yeah, it's in the struggling that I get stronger and stronger. Yeah. That I will grow. Yes. These are good. Renee. Oh, I'm not as strong as I thought I was, and it's okay to lean on somebody else. Good. Oh, these are really good sermons. Ooh, what's really important to me? Let's keep working across. Was there more? Yeah. What to let go of. Good. Keep moving across. Steve. That the struggle doesn't mean that there's something wrong. In fact, I'll go further, Steve. Struggle might mean that there's something right. I will get through this. What else? Pay. That community is vital to getting through the struggle. The only way out is through. Good. Carolyn. God is with me. I like that Jacob says that thing like, I've seen God's face. I've struggled, but I've seen God's face. Yeah, good. Learning, oh, that was the one I would have put number one on my list, is that in the struggle, I learn who I really am. Yeah. And so for Jacob, even, like, the name heel, I don't think that's a compliment. Your name is different. You figure out who you are and you take on a new name because you're not the same you were before. A couple more. Yeah. Keep moving forward. Everything comes at a cost. Good. It's not all about me. And this Jacob story, it's so much bigger. I didn't even do his Stairway to Heaven story where God reaffirms the Abrahamic covenant. Like, hey, Jacob, this story about your grandfather, you're part of that story. And I'm going to bless you like I promised your grandfather. Good. Oh, it's so painful to learn that one, that I'm not in control, right? How many of us had to learn that one along the way, that I'm not in control? Yeah. Good, good, good. Yeah, Kevin. Oh, you learn the character of the people that are on the journey with you. I like that to me. Anybody finished Stranger Things yet? Like that to me is that story, right? Like it's, you learn the character of the people that are around you. You learn who your friends are. You learn the strength of your friends. And it's not just Stranger Things. It just happens that we finished it last night, so it's in my head. But it's about, I mean, all those stories, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, pick one. They're all about the companions and what you learn and get from your companions. Good. Anybody else? I don't want to leave anybody out. This is good. Laura. The struggle can feel like a conversation. Yeah. With God, with our community, with our faith. Yeah. So here's what I want to do this morning to finish up. Is I want to do two things. I want to ask this question is, if you're in the struggle today, for those of you that are right in the midst of it, like right now, when I said struggle, you just went, bam, this is where I'm at. This is what it is. This is the thing. This is my health thing, my job thing, my relationship thing, financial thing. Have I hit all the major categories there? What's that? All right, good. Keep taking steps. And the thing today is, what's the baby step that you can take? I'm going to do a promo for the podcast again. So the podcast season two, and thank you for those of you that are giving us feedback. It's so good. It's been really helpful and I'll be sharing it with our leadership teams. But, if you haven't listened yet, I'll do a little spoiler. So there's one of the podcasts, I think it's episode three, the one we interviewed Jessica for. We were talking with Jessica McGee. She's not here this week. I think she's in Costa Rica. Lucky her. Studying sea turtles for a couple weeks. And we were talking to her about anxiety and depression and art and good mental health and all these things. And she said, I was talking about how do you paint beautiful things that you paint, and also how do you hold on to your anxiety and depression over here? And she said, well, first of all, I just let it be. I let it have its space. She didn't say it exactly this way, but she talked about, and I'm not sharing anything that she didn't already share on the podcast. So this is not like personal. It is personal, but she shared it. She said, and I love this moment. She said, so some days I just allow myself to lay in bed all day. I allow myself just to be sad, but I do that. And I promise myself that tomorrow I'm going to do one little thing to get better. I'm going to take a baby step tomorrow. And she's like, I do. And then the day after that, I take another step, and I take another step, and I take another step. And I want to encourage you that if you're in the struggle, when you're in the struggle, sometimes we get paralyzed by it. We don't know what to do. We don't know where to go. We don't know how to turn. Like, I'm thinking if I'm Jacob and my brother's going to kill me, what's going through his head, right? Like, what do I do? How do I navigate this? How do I protect my two wives and two concubines and my 11 children? How do I protect my wealth? How do I protect my own life? How do I not get my brother to kill me? And I'm sure his mind is racing with all these things, right? And I know your mind is racing too. And I know that as you've sat here this morning, there's been songs or there's been things I've said that have just, you can't just walk in here and leave it behind. There's things. And so today, the challenge to you is to take a baby step. What's a thing that you can do today? It's not going to solve it today. If the problem is that big, if the struggle is that big, you will not solve it today or probably tomorrow or the day after. But today you can take a step. Maybe you need to email somebody, text someone, talk to someone. Maybe you need to do some research. Maybe you need to read something. Maybe you need to go for a walk and tend to your own soul. Maybe you just need to go home today and put on some sweats and watch a movie all day and forget about your problems for a day and stop being so like wired about it. Maybe that's the thing you need to do for yourself today. It's a perfect day, by the way, to put on sweats and lay on the couch and fall asleep. I mean, I'm not telling you what I'll be doing all afternoon, but the second place you might be this morning as you're sitting here is someone you love is in the struggle. Now, I want to say something. Those of you that are in the struggle, don't check out right now, because you're not alone. The world doesn't revolve around you and your struggle. There's also people that are hurting too. And sometimes when we're in the struggle, we tune out to everybody else's struggle. And I understand, because what we're going through is so all-consuming. And I'm going to ask you for 5 minutes to set yours down and think about somebody else in the struggle. And how do you reach out? I'm going to also promote the podcast again. If you listen to episode 5 with the Ganshaws, we're sitting right here, I haven't told you guys this. I've gotten really good feedback about this particularly. They talked about when they were going through their time about how people helped. And I asked them like what was helpful and not helpful. And they said, which was really convicting to me, by the way, so I'm just chief sinner here. They said, it's not super helpful when people say to you like, let me know if you need any help. I've always thought I was helping when I said to people, let me know if you need any help. You know what that does? It was really clear talking to them, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm not very good at this. What it does is it says to a person that's carrying a really heavy burden, hey, let me just throw one more thing on your thing that you have to carry, and what you have to carry is you have to ask for help now. The responsibility's off me. I offered. It's on you now. If you want the help, you have to get it. Now, I want to say both sides. For those of us on the struggle bus, we have to ask for help. But if you really want to help somebody you love, just show up. I'm going to tell a story that'll embarrass Jennifer just slightly. We had a thing in our neighborhood that happened just recently, and it's not that you did something bad. It was just that I don't know you want the recognition for these kinds of things. But we had this thing that happened in our neighborhood, and we don't even really know the people. And she called the lady, and she's like, can I bring you a meal on Tuesday night? And what do you think the lady said? Because she doesn't know us. She's like, no, you can't do that. And then Jennifer said like, yeah, so we're bringing you a meal on Tuesday night. Right? Is that roughly the way it went? And so she took a meal. And the Ganshaws talked about people just left groceries on the front step. People just showed up. People just said, hey, let me just take Jude from you for the afternoon. Let me just show up for you. You don't have to call. You don't have to ask. And listen, we all know, like some people you don't know well enough to do that to, and it's annoying. But the people that you love, that you're close to, you know, so keep reaching out. What's something you can do today? So every one of us in this room, you might be the king of struggle. If we had a contest this morning, you might be the king or queen of struggle this morning. You still know somebody else who's struggling. So here's what we're going to do. I want you to take out your phones. I'm not kidding. Take out your phones. Everybody. If you don't have a phone, you can write a note on your notes. I don't know. I didn't think about the people that don't have phones. You can borrow my phone after the service, Maddox, if you'd like. I want you to open your texts. And I want you to think of somebody that you know is on the struggle bus. And I want you to send them a text. And I'm going to tell you, if you don't know what to say to them, I'm going to tell you what to say. Just say, I know this is a hard time. I'm with you. Or, I know this is a hard time, and I'm proud of you. Keep fighting. It doesn't matter. Just say something encouraging to them. Now, do not give advice. We talked about that with Job's friends, right? Don't tell them why they're suffering. You don't know. That was the message of Job. Just encourage them. I thought of mine earlier, so I'm sending mine to someone in the room, just so you know. And you can do that. I hope people are sending them to people in the room. Listen, that's all it takes most of the time. That's all it takes. If somebody you know is struggling, all it takes is you just to keep reminding them, I'm here. I'm here. And when you know something to do, just do it. Just do that thing, even if it's small. You guys didn't talk about big things people did. I know people did some big things for you. But the examples you used in the podcast were like people dropped off groceries and people picked up Jude. I mean, that doesn't take a ton. this story is just one of struggle for all of us. We all have our seasons, we all have our times, and sometimes we're on the struggle bus and sometimes we're not. And sometimes we're on the struggle bus for a long time and we meet other people on the struggle bus and we just keep encouraging each other. And so I just want to encourage you. I could go back to my slides, is what I'm trying to do here. I want to encourage you today to take your steps, to reach out, to do something. Don't let this just slip by. I'm like, oh, that's a good idea, but to do something. Last slide. I don't know that I want to say a whole lot here. I want to kind of go back to this whole series. Like, I hope what I really desire in this, and the reason I wanted to teach this series, is I know that in my own faith journey for a long time, I didn't know how to read these stories anymore. There was a time where I just knew that they kind of made me sick to my stomach. Like I said last week, like the ethnic cleansing of Canaan just makes me kind of sick to my stomach. And I didn't know how to read these scriptures anymore. And I hope that maybe in the last couple months, I've given you some pathways and some ways to help start like seeing these as like really valuable stories that still carry a lot of weight and are still meaningful and important points of discussion and anchor points for what faith is. That the things that they were wrestling with and these ideas are still the things that we're wrestling with, that we're still talking about. And I hope you just go after them and read them and argue with them. And when you get stuck, reach out to other people and ask questions and say, what might this story mean? Let's pray. God, I want to pray first of all for those of us this morning that are in those spots of struggle and it's hard and we feel disoriented and we feel like everything's a fight. Help us to keep taking our baby steps, to keep moving into the next thing, to keep believing, to keep moving forward. And God, for those of us that's really not our reality right now, or maybe it is, but we also can pick our heads up and look around us. Help us to be a source of encouragement to others. Help us to be a space where other people, that we can be healing for other people and support and encouragement and drive out of us this lie that we don't have anything to give. And help us all to see that we just don't have answers. We don't need to have answers. We just need to show up. And so help us to show up. And God, I think when we do that, the church becomes something that nothing else in society can become. So help us to be that. In your name I pray. Amen.